Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to, I mean, we're not going to ruin Michael, but
I mean, there's not much you can ruin with Michael.
If I guess if you've been alive for, you know, 35 plus years, you know what that story is. So,
yes, exactly.
But we're definitely going to talk about the new Michael Jackson biopic Michael, and of course a few other things. I wanted to hit you with a surprise cut.
Okay.
Not surprise, just to like, I did not discuss that I was doing this last week, and I don't remember if I told you. But when is the last time you watched Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan?
On the big screen or just watching it? Like on
just in
like,
general.
Last year, I'm a big Star Trek head. I'm a Trekker. So last year, the last time I saw it on the big screen was like pre-pandemic. The Hollywood Bowl had a live symphony orchestration of James Horner's score accompaniment to the showing, and then there was like an intro by Shatner himself, which was fun. Like, you know, he did like this 5-minute intro, and then they started off with the big screen movie. I'm a big Trekker, so like I try to watch it once every couple of years, so it's pretty fresh in my head. I take it then you got to go see
I got to see Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which I probably haven't seen in decades.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And afterwards, I was treated to about 90 minutes of William Shatner live in person.
Oh, wow, dude. So my first question is what did you think after this many years, like after decades of not seeing the movie and then watching it again on the big screen, obviously,
the reputation of that film is well earned and well deserved. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, it is. Very much so is. Like, it's like,
it helps if you know all of the backstory stuff, but like, it also doesn't really need you to know anything other than like they marooned that crew on SETI Alpha 5 or 6 or whatever. And then, you know, it's been this many years later, and like, that's beyond needing to know that, like everything else, it cooks, man. Like the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. Like, that whole fucking thing is just fantastic. Scotty Holland, his dead nephew, up to like, oh my god, man. It's just like, I don't know. I've never been a huge Trek person.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen plenty of it. You know, I've seen all the movies. And I probably watched all of Next Generation when it aired, or mm-hmm. in syndication, because like we used to just watch it. And there was a point in my senior year of high school where I joined the work study program. So I only had to go to school half a day.
Yeah.
And the other half of the day I was supposed to go to work, but I didn't go to work until like 3 p.m. So I would go home from, I was actually living on my own. That's a whole other story. I would go to my apartment and I would eat lunch, and then I would lay on the couch and watch Star Trek Next Generation and Bonanza, because whatever, I didn't have cable, but whatever, it's probably the local Fox affiliate, like their noon to 2 p.m. slot was Star Trek Next Generation and Bonanza. And so that's what I watched every day.
That's such a weird 1-2 combo. Not like, if you really think about it, because like, you know, whatchamacallit was like Star Trek was basically a Western set in space, right?
Right.
It's not too weird, but it's still such a weird, like, it's the Buzz and Woody of it all, like, you know, sci-fi versus Western. I mean,
it really was. Like, it's so Buzz and Woody. Like, that's, but I was like, that was my little, like, eat, get ready for work, like, veg out, watch. So, like, I've got enough of Trek. I was into Enterprise for a little while. Mm-hmm. Like, I never got into Deep Space Nine or Voyager, but, I wasn't going in, like, really expecting to, like, be back on, like, oh, shit, this movie's a masterpiece. But It is, man. Like,
it really is.
It's so fucking good. And, I mean, Shatner afterwards, look, he's a rambling old man.
Yeah, I mean he's like in his 90s now,
but we was getting around that stage.
Yeah,
like it was not like last year I saw Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan in concert, and granted they've lived rock star lives, but I feel like Shatner probably has too. They practically had to wheel them out on the stage, and I don't think either one of them are 94. So
no, they're not. Here's the thing. Like, here's the difference is like,
maybe it's smoking. Maybe it's that those two people are smokers, and Shatner went on a fucking so you got to submit questions ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And one of the questions was about his co-stars. And he went on like a 15-minute rant about how much he loved DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy. And one of the things was smoking. He's like, yeah. I love Leonard Nimoy like a brother. And he smoked and he was never going to give it up. And like, he was like, just, it's not worth it. It's not worth the years it takes. It's not like just this whole thing about anti-smoking. So, maybe that's a big part of it, but you know,
well, that in an active lifestyle, I mean, the Shat lived in that, like he was like, you know, people forget that, you know, girdle conversations aside, in his later years, like it playing like in the 90s, but I mean in the 80s and 70s he was TJ Hooker, he was still doing action into his 50s
on top of like the man has there's a reason in Star Trek Generations they find him at a fucking ranch riding a horse.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's what he does. You know? Yeah.
And then he goes out like in an action scene, like his death is action scene, like his two deaths. Cause the man dies twice in that movie. Like there's two deaths, right? Like, you know, I have a hot take about Generations, which is that Picard is a fucking asshole for taking Kirk out of the Nexus, because Kirk deserved the Nexus. Like he literally deserved to live his dreams, because I mean that's what the Nexus was, right? You live forever in the Nexus, like comforting in your dreams, right? Like he died a noble death, right? Like where he was saving the Enterprise, doing exactly what he should have been doing, not saving some fucking like, and this is just like, you know, this is my whole Picard thing, which is like saving some fucking by the rules punk ass bitch, like that couldn't handle, like there's no captain better than Kirk, right? Like, he found always a way. I mean, shit, he brought his best friend back from the dead. I mean, that's saying some shit, right? And then when it was
I used to be a Picard guy. Like, yeah. And I mean, I guess I still am, just because it's like Doctor Who. It's like, that's my doctor.
Yeah. You know, kind of like, thing. David Tennant is always my doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. That's mostly what I know is Picard. Like, yeah. I've watched a little of the original series and all of the Shatner Trek movies. But like, after rewatching Wrath of Khan, it's just like, no. I think maybe that movie alone kind of ends the, like, assuming you can divorce yourself from, like, the Shatner is a dick of it all, you know,
kind yeah.
of thing.
Like, but also, like, the weirdest part about that movie is that, like, okay, so, like, I have to ask you something. Is it weird to you that, so, the movie is about retirement, but then the Shat and the crew still have 15 more years of adventures? Like, they find an excuse to do 15 more adventures, or approximately four and a half other movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild, right? It's what's so beautiful about the movie is retirement. It's about, like, getting older, right? But, I mean, getting older is literally, we are both about a decade away from where they, all of them were. Like, they're in their mid-50s. And, like, it's wild to think in 82, which is a substitute for 23rd century, that retirement is 55. Right? Like, yeah. I'm fairly certain I'm going to fucking die working, right? Like, I'm going to be fucking 85 and like fucking still working. Cause thanks boomers. Thanks for getting out of the fucking way. But you know, thanks fucking capitalism. But anyways, it's fucking wild to me. Like, the last time I watched it, I couldn't get over the fact that Shatner looks about my age. Like, he's about my fucking age when he's retiring. Like, he's like got this admiralty. He's basically sent off to pasture. And I'm like, if 30 years later, that's your prime. Like, your 40s and 50s are your fucking prime, right? Like, yeah. you still got it. And it's like,
that's kind of what the movie does too, though, right?
Like, yeah.
They spend at least a small chunk of that movie basically saying, like, hey, we don't want to, like, this is what we're meant to do. We're meant to be on this ship. We're meant to be out there doing this. You know, it's, and I appreciate that they have Kirk, I don't want to say resigned to his fate, but very accepting of, like, okay, I'm an admiral, like, I'm helping bring up the next group of students, like, into the academy and through the academy and, like, administering this. Like, he doesn't seem bitter about it.
You know? No, he doesn't. It's just like,
no, this is what you do, you know? And it's not until, like, his past starts coming back to haunt him and he's on that ship and, like, all of that he's like, yeah, fuck, what am I thinking? Like, no, let's go.
Well, and that's also, Bones is kind of a dick, like during his birthday party.
Yeah.
Is it in his birthday party? No. Like, that's in, like, 3.
When he gives him the glasses?
Yeah, when he gives him the glasses.
Yeah.
When, like, he's like, you know, it's just, it's wild to me that, like, and then that, the fashion of the 23rd century is fucking wild. Like, it's like, so all pantsuits. I was going to ask
you, since you are a Trek person.
Yeah.
Okay. So is there a why put him in that outfit with the, like, button top flap? If he's just going to open the flap literally at any point in time, anytime he feels like it, he's just going to let that flap loose.
So my thing is that the red suits, another hot take, because a lot of people prefer the red suits. The red suits, or like the movie Star Trek stuff, like, is the worst. Like, nobody ever found, like, I feel like the Kelvin ones, the ones from the J.J. Abrams ones.
I do think the outfits are nicer.
Yes. They're a little bit more like they're the best of like what the velour suits of the 60s were. Cause like the, yeah. like you watch the 60s one and it's kind of like, there's like it's a high adventure show and it's kind of like, it's fun cause you get to learn a lesson and it's kind of very Twilight Zone-y. But it's also like this very 60s go-go pop, like, hey, I'm going to do like the whole thing of like Shatner in the 90s doing the MTV skit with Seven where the green girl, he kisses the green girl. Yeah. What are you here? Kiss. Or Zach Brannigan, like in Futurama. That's a real component. Like, I think that why Trek people get so upset is because it's almost too close to real, because that's essentially Kirk. He's a stick man. Like, he's a dude that doesn't mind getting alien, like, you know, getting messy with aliens. And it, like, that was like the whole thing with the costumes too, because anything they wore in the 60s one is very kind of like, hey, like very kind of like, you could see the ruffles that were tucked into the suits, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, like it doesn't feel as I guess buttoned up, for lack of a better word. It doesn't feel like
you're military.
Or like high ranking military. It feels like, it felt more like fatigues, you know.
Yes.
like you see somebody in the military out in their fatigues, like it's a little more relaxed, and then you see them in the movie and like they're all in these outfits that look like they're going to like a military ball, you know, like or a funeral or some kind of inauguration, or and to have it be like that all the time it's a little much. And I didn't know if the loosening of the flap was like, I wonder if that's a Shatner choice.
It was definitely a Shatner choice. Like, okay. Nicholas Meyer on the commentary tracks talks about how, it was a weird little, like, as soon as Shat found that he could do it, it became a thing that he did. Like, he had all these little tics. And so Myers hated the tics because it made it feel like very garish, his acting. So he would cut all around them, like he would take them out. And Shatner would get mad. There's a famous story that I'll tell in a few moments. Would get mad. But part of the thing was that he would rip the thing off. Like, he would rip it, like he would do this dramatic like ripping of the thing off. But we never see that. We only see the collar out, and the, like Meyer said, like he couldn't tell him to put it back because it was already done. So multiple times it would just be like that. And then there was an altercation, like a elevation of it, because you see blood on it at a certain point.
Yeah.
And it's Shatner doing that on purpose so that he can make sure that it stays like that. And it has to, it's kind of there for dramatic effect. Like, everything that he did was to overact. And, like, you know, like, it's Shatner's impulse, right? And so, like, there's this famous story about Myers where, okay, so, like, in the famous moment where he gets the better of Khan in their first confrontation, where he goes, now, right? Like, he just says, but the way he says it is so great because it's so subdued. It's just now. Like, he's not selling, like, oh, here it comes, I'm gonna get it to you, and then, like, the shields break, right? That take is take number 52, because Nicholas Meyers kept on having him do it because he would oversell it. And Shatner got so, like, he was like, it took about 40 takes, and then he started to get bored. And that's what I wanted. He's like, he kept on overselling the moment. He kept like he kept on making it a fucking joke. And it's not a joke. He's like, in that moment, He has lost his ship. He has lost everything. And this is the one thing, if he even twitches a micron, if Kirk moves an eyelash, he will know, and he will get blasted out of the sky. And he's like, and I couldn't tell him because Shatner is Shatner. He knows Kirk better than anybody, right? And so, and then it was like later on, part of the reason why he didn't get the third one, not only was because of Nimoy, but it was because Kirk or because Shatner had approval of whoever was going to direct the third one.
Right.
And the deal was
Shatner, Shatner got, Nimoy got whatever. Nimoy got Shatner.
Shatner got exactly.
Shatner approves Nimoy to direct the third one so that he can then direct. He directed the fifth one.
Because the third and fourth were, like a 1-2 combo, because Nimoy was like, I have a story and we can do it low budget. Because that was the whole thing. And that's the reason why we always see the dress uniforms, is because Paramount was so, and they've not changed in 40 years, they're so cheap that the uniforms that are from the first, or from the second movie, are the same uniforms that are in Undiscovered Country, their last one. Like the same uniforms, the same like set of five uniforms. They kept on like, They kept on having to alter them and fix them because Paramount would not pay for clothing. That's why multiple people like the Klingons keep on coming back for like as enemies, because they were the only things that they had, like they had moldings for the makeup effects and stuff, and they wouldn't pay. They made these movies for like even though they would make a ton of money, they made these movies basement bottom. Like the reason why the fourth one is set on Earth, I don't know if you ever knew this, was that the whale person was actually supposed to be Eddie Murphy. And Eddie Murphy, up until the last minute, was starring in Star Trek IV as the whaleographer. It was only at the last minute he dropped out because I think it was his dad died. His dad died, and he was like, I can't do this. I can't. I like it, and he dropped out, and then they had to reconfigure the script right away. I mean, it's the biggest one. It would have probably been even bigger if Eddie had starred in it, which is kind of ironic because, like, literally 6 months later, Paramount forces him to do Coming to America. Like, you know, they were like, oh, well, we have this contract with you about Star Trek IV. You have to do something else. Paramount's just a cheap-ass fucking studio. Fucking have always been really dumb. But anywho,
Shatner was not... He wasn't harsh about Paramount, but I don't think he was too kind about it.
Yep. I can imagine.
He definitely had some thoughts on, like, he didn't talk about current stuff, but just the way things kind of shook out in the long run. It was really cool. Like it. I hate to be morbid, but this year especially has felt like every time I turn around, like somebody
from our childhood or our past that informed us. Yeah. Like we haven't even talked. Like, I mean, we didn't even talk about it, but like, you know, Patrick Muldoon, like a guy who, like, you know, if you watched any kind of Aaron Spelling, you know, he just recently passed
all over the place.
Yeah, but. You were saying about, like, you know,
it feels like relentless. And so, like, this opportunity, like, he was going to be in Chattanooga hosting the screening, doing a Q&A afterwards. And so it was like, it's in our backyard, man. Like, literally, it's a 4-minute drive from my apartment. And
yeah. Oh, man. How do you miss that? Yeah, how do you
even not being a big Trek person, like, how do you not go? Stephanie has actually never seen any of the Star Trek movies.
Oh.
She's apparently seen plenty of the TV show, but has never seen any of the movies. And so this was her first Star Trek movie. That was kind of, I was like, you've never seen the Wrath of Khan? I was like, oh my God, she was like, really? I was like, that's like saying you've never seen Empire Strikes Back. Even as not a Trek person, it's like, that's the like that's the one, you know?
Yeah. It's like, to be perfectly honest, it's the thing, like, other than, like, you know, like all non-trekkers say, the whale one, right? But even the whale one is, it's just okay. It's not, you know, fourth.
I have fond memories of that one, but I think it's because, for some reason, that was the one, like, as a kid that wound up on TV all the time.
Yes.
And so, like, I've seen it quite a few times.
It's,
I always enjoyed it.
Well, it was the biggest hit, right? Like, it was like, I don't know if you remember that, but I mean, it was like, it was right on the heels of Back to the Future. So, like, time travel was a huge thing. And it basically essentially did the same thing that did, right? Like, it basically did the, I'm now gonna, like, now that you said that, I'm probably gonna watch Wrath of Khan tonight. I'll probably, because I can't not, like, that fucking score, like you just, us just talking about it, but regardless of that, Voyage Home, like back on track, like, Voyage Home, like, is like that one that was the biggest hit. So it was always on TV because it was set in like 1988 or 1987 or whatever time it took place in. And it was a comedy. It was like, yeah, a feel good, like, save the whales, save the ecology,
which was a huge thing at the time.
Oh, like, my god,
it was everywhere,
so much, dude. Like, and we're gonna get into 80s nostalgia because, you know, like, Michael is all about that, but it's wild to me to like you bringing it up, like, it makes, like, it's very tangible. Like, does that make sense? Like, it makes, yeah, like there's certain, like, pillars of, like, cinema, music, reading, like, novels, like, when they're discussed, they're so palpable for me that it brings back, like, I know it sounds weird, but the taste of the 80s, like it's a sensory thing. Like for me, like, when I really, like, when it hits me hardest, it's when I can sense, like, I can feel something, like the taste of Ecto Cooler. Like, that doesn't happen too often, right? But, like, if you tell, like, the first thing I think of, like, when you tell me you saw Wrath of Khan, and I start thinking about Wrath of Khan, and I start thinking about scenes, is I automatically start having sense memories of, like, oh shit, I remember, like, not Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters doesn't remind me of Ecto Cooler. It's like Wrath of Khan or the real Ghostbusters. If we start talking about those things, it's like, oh, I can remember the taste and how awful it was and how it had this weird aftertaste. But then it starts making me remember other things, like the way that I prefer, like, why was it that we always felt like the Nintendo controllers were shittier than the Genesis, but the Genesis had a beautiful controller? It was because it was ergonomic, because it was smooth. It didn't have hard edges, right? It didn't, yeah, make your thumbs feel like shit after, like, but that's what I remember, right? Like, I start to remember these things. I start to remember how I couldn't get past the third level of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on SNES, but why did it look shittier than the arcade version? Like, why couldn't it just be the arcade version? Because I kicked ass at that. It's just, like, weird kind of, like, sense memory things that something like that brings up, but it's not the actual, like, and, like, Michael had some of that, like, at its best, like, had some of that, but yeah, like, I'm glad that you got to see it on the big screen, because, like, that's a treat, like, more than, like, just as much as seeing Shatner live, it's like being able to see that movie on the big screen. Like, I'm really hoping that, like on kind of like a similar note, because I know that he's talked about it. Dick Van Dyke has talked about possibly doing, like, something in LA for a Q&A. And if he does, I'm like, I don't care how much fucking money it is, I'm going. Like, whatever he's showing, like, if it's Mary Poppins, even better. But whatever it is, like, whatever he's deciding to do. Yeah.
At that point, I'd be like, I don't care if it's an episode of Diagnosis Murder, man.
Yeah, seriously. Like,
let's watch it and then just listen to Dick Van Dyke talk.
Yeah, it was an hour.
Wonderful, wonderful experience. I much like Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan, I wish it wasn't at the what seems to probably be the tail end of his career, but it was still really, really cool to just be like, I'm in the same room as William Shatner, man. He's still funny. Like I say, he's very rambling and loses his place and kind of like just is an old man, but he is still pretty funny. Like he has wonderful stories, even if some of them are probably made up. And he ends, which I'm assuming, I assume some of the questions are obviously planted. Like some of them probably do come from the crowd, but he does the whole joke of like the guy, there's a moderator and he asks a question. He's like, well, this was maybe our most popular question, but people want to know boxers or briefs. And he just looks out and he goes, depends, which is such an obvious joke. And I'm like, that's a planted joke, but it's still pretty funny. He ends probably the way he ends everything he does like this by talking about especially since the space flight. So the last question is about him going to space, and he talks about it and talks about seeing the Earth from up there, and like he's talked about this in interviews and how it put everything truly into perspective about like, what are we doing down here? Like the wars and the poverty and it's all so unnecessary, and it's really heartfelt. It's really beautiful. It was cool to see. I hesitate to say it was on the big screen. It was on a screen and it was projected. It was not a huge screen.
Okay.
Cause it's a pretty big theater. So like it would be the kind of projection screen you'd probably have in your house.
Yeah.
And in a theater that size, it's just not that big.
Oh, that sucks. So
it was good enough to see.
Yeah.
But not a
small size theater's
screen.
It was more like the biggest home theater, which is like not even compared to the smallest big screen.
It was nothing compared to we didn't even see Michael on. We just saw it in like a regular old theater, not IMAX or anything like that. Yeah, it was not even as big as that screen. So, but it was still not like it wasn't like, so I'm so far away and it's so small I can't really even see it or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just like, y'all could probably do a better job of like getting a giant screen in here. So, I mean, projectors are like relatively cheap now.
Yeah.
And really, you just got to get one that will project at that size, and it doesn't even have to be a screen. It could just be a curtain.
Yeah.
Like just a white curtain that you drop down.
White backdrop,
Yeah. It is what it is. It was still really, really nice. And like I said, fuck that movie. Just Kirstie Alley is fucking fantastic. And I don't know what, because she didn't come back for the third one, right? That's the whole
salary. Salary. Salary and Cheers. Because which is the weirdest part, because Paramount was Cheers and Cheers was Paramount, right? But I guess the whole thing was that they didn't want, because they only signed her for one movie. They didn't want her to they didn't want to pay her the money that she wanted. And then she was actually supposed to come back for the sixth one, and she backed out of that one, and Kim Cattrall had to come in, and they rewrote the part for somebody different.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be a return. Kirstie Alley is always just has always given, which, I never like, you know, I never, like, you know, I don't feel bad about that. Like, if you don't get paid the money that you think you're worth, then you don't get paid, right? Like,
yeah,
like, it was the thing that Toby argued with them about for so fucking long. It's why we almost got a Jake Gyllenhaal in Spider-Man 2. But, you know, Sony was smart because without him, like, a Jake Gyllenhaal Spider-Man 2 would have been the worst decision of all time.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think that movie would be regarded as well by fans if it's not Toby.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm with you. Like, I maybe don't like Michael Keaton did it on Batman because he didn't want to come back, so he asked for something he knew they were never going to pay him.
Yeah,
but like. In the situation of like this, or like we just saw it recently with the Scream franchise, like, yeah, you know, I mean, you should probably pay the star of your film. I mean, we saw Jeremy Renner has not been quiet about what Disney tried to do to him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it sucks she didn't get to play in that world anymore, but like, I don't blame her. Like, if they're not gonna, you know, pay you what you think you're worth, then yeah, don't waste your time with it. So
absolutely.
Anyway, that was awesome. I did. I know you said you didn't have time for much this week. I did get to see a couple of other things.
All right, hit me up. One, maybe I've seen it.
One is okay. So. I don't know why, but I decided to watch Hellboy, not the Ron Perlman Hellboy.
Oh, the
Harbor Hellboy. So I put off watching it. Like, I was excited for it because I like David Harbour.
Oh, yeah.
Like, despite whatever. His personal shit's his personal shit. I don't care. I'm not married and or sleeping with a man, so that's none of my business. I mean, he should probably be a little more discreet, but whatever, dude, whatever. I like him on screen. Like, he's just fun.
Yeah.
And so I was excited when they announced it. The trailer didn't look good. His makeup as Hellboy is, like, the worst thing about this movie is his Hellboy look.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because Ron Perlman and Guillermo del Toro and company just created something truly fantastic and iconic. I mean, it is Mignola-esque in like the del Toro movies, but like it's also its own thing. And this felt, which is no surprise, Mike Mignola was like really involved in this production. So everything feels more like his kind of sensibility and his art. Unfortunately, like it's a lot of digital effects. None of that fucking works. The digital effects in the movie are atrocious.
Well,
the practical effects aren't that good either.
Well, so. And so like, I think that the reason why it didn't work for me was because it was so much like Mignola stuff. Whereas like, I feel like Del Toro took an inspiration from and found the happy medium of what he does. And also like he developed his for like close to 10 years, like almost a decade. He worked on his Hellboy, right?
Yeah, this like, feels like it was put together in 6 months.
Exactly. And I feel like you have, like, I feel like as much as it's well-intentioned, like, oh, okay, well, you know, more accurate to Mignola's work, right? But unless you're doing an animated feature, like, which I feel like is what we got in those two animated things that they did.
Yeah, which are pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're very accurate, but it's also, it shows to me, like, those things also prove to me that you cannot do accurate representation of Mignola's work anywhere other than, like, his is very kind of, like, comic books, like Sam Keith, right? Like,
Yeah, like, I mean, they're two of the modern, like, if you're into, like, art, specifically comic book art, superhero art, they're definitely high up on the list of, like, if I showed you a piece of artwork that was not signed by Mignola or Keith, you could look at that art and be like, that's Mike Mignola.
That's Sam Keith. Yeah, exactly.
Like, Jim Lee, you might know. Rob Liefeld, you might know. But they also have like a dynamic style that so many people have tried to copy that, like, you'd be like, I think that's Liefeld or I think that's Lee. But, you know, like, speaking of Lee, Jay Lee. He's also one that, like, when you see Jay Lee art, you're like, that's Jay Lee.
Yeah. His can I just make a quick recommend? His Dracula is amazing.
Yeah.
Like if you guys have not read Jay Lee's Dracula interpretation of Dracula, please do it. Especially if you like Mignola or you like Sam Keith's work. It's kind of funny that you bring that up because I feel like he's the son that begat from Mignola and Sam Keith, even though Mignola came later. But anywho, you're right. I mean,
it's like in the same way that like Jack Kirby art is like you see Jack Kirby art and you're like, well, now there's so much. They're like, that's somebody aping Jack Kirby, but you know Kirby art when you see it, you know, like it's very distinct. And so I think the Hellboy movie, if they had spent the time on it, if they had developed it the way Del Toro developed his, if they had spent the money on all practical effects whenever possible and good practical effects, I think this movie would have been really fucking good. Like, I think Harbor as Hellboy is fine. It looks terrible. But I think he's playing him right. Like, he's playing him much younger than Ron Perlman does, even though Ron Perlman's playing him kind of like a 16, 17-year-old. He's playing it kind of like he's a bratty 12 or 13-year-old almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's because that's the thing about Hellboy. I think Mignola called it like reverse dog years.
Yes.
So he's only ages like one, even though physically he's aging, he only mentally really ages like 1 year every 7 to 8 years.
Yep.
So like if he's been around for, you know, 30, 40 years, he's only like 10 years old. Like, you know, it's a funny little concept, but once you know that, like, it kind of helps with his, like, why is he so kiddy? Like, he's such a child.
Mm-hmm.
He's always throwing temper tantrums and I actually think what's his name is pretty good to step in as the his father figure, the professor,
Ron Broom.
What the fuck is the actor's name?
Ian McShane.
McShane, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was a lot of fun. Killing him off at the end is a fucking weird choice. And making him like the weird ghost thing, like that didn't make sense to me. Because if you don't, you can at least be like, well, this movie's kind of part of that same franchise. But now it definitely isn't.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thomas Hayden Church's Lobster Johnson is pretty cool.
That's a lot of fun. Like, that was exciting. Like, towards the, like, right at the beginning, I was like, and then he doesn't come back until the very end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know that was budgetary reasons. I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, I remember not, like, being very mad at it, like, in 2019, seeing it in the theaters, going, this is what... Because, I mean, like, I'm in the bag for the Del Toro ones. Like, my thing was that I really wanted a third. I wanted their third Hellboy, and to get essentially get not that, like, to not get that, like, is kind of like, it was disappointing in a way that I couldn't, like, I couldn't quantify, because I was constant. I couldn't look at it on its own, right? And like, it's not only this, but there's another one. The weirdest part about this is that they've made two more Hellboys. They made this one, and then like 2 years ago, they made the one from the guys that did the Crank movies. Like, the
Crooked Man?
Or... Yeah.
And I haven't watched it.
Dude, I couldn't even get through 10 minutes of it. Yeah, like, that's how bad it is. Like, it just doesn't, like, you know, it... like, it just, it has some of the stuff that you want in it, but it's also, like, hampered by its budget. Like, you can tell that its budget is definitely, like, there. Like, it's not there. Like, it's, there's nothing there. Like, it's just, like, they got a dude that's just, like, some dude to play Hellboy.
Yeah, that was... one of the things that I was like, you don't need a name, but like, I don't even know who this is. Like, I don't think the character look is worse than David Harbour's, but it definitely looks cheaper than, I mean, I know it is cheaper, but like, if you can't even get the Hellboy look down, like, I don't think you should go. Like, that's the first thing you do.
Yes.
Like, if you can't screen test and it looks good with him as Hellboy, maybe don't go any further. I'll probably get around to watching that eventually. So a couple of other things. One, you may have watched this. I guess I'm catching up on the movies I didn't watch in 2019 and 2020. I finally, we sat down last Sunday night. After I was like, I want to watch some kind of space movie. What's something I haven't seen? And I was like, you know what? We haven't watched Lightyear. And so,
yes,
we watched Lightyear. And I think, much like Hellboy, like, I think there's something of a good movie in here. Unfortunately, you called it Lightyear, and if this movie was not about a character named Buzz Lightyear, it would be fucking great.
Yeah. So I like, what I think that ultimately for me, like, why I feel like it didn't do, like, other than it also being released in both Disney Plus and in theaters at the same time, I think that ultimately what happened for me was, I think it was what everybody thought, which was like, I think there was a lot of confusion. Like, you called the movie Lightyear, it's about Buzz Lightyear, but it's the movie that Andy saw back in 1992, 30 years before, like 30 years before, but the movie looks nothing like a 90s sci-fi adventure movie.
It's that whole, like, why do the prequels look better than the
originals? The Israels, yeah, exactly.
Like, it doesn't, you know, fit with the narrative you're saying.
But okay, asterisk on that, George was right. It should look, because he said something in an interview where he said, well, you know, you got to think 30 years or 20 years later, the Empire has, like, basically scourged all of the resources. And so, like, any kind of fascist regime, which we've seen, it's being recycled and recycled. He's like, it's basically, he was lying out of his ass, but he somehow made it feel right, right?
Yeah, it does, you know, at least give reason to that. It doesn't really work with Buzz Lightyear.
Here, no, it doesn't.
The movie's supposed to feel like a
90s
sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It like it feels like a modern sci-fi movie, you know. And
yeah,
I mean, like I said, which would have been fine if you just call it anything that isn't Lightyear. I mean, if you just rebrand ever, like, I know that's a lot of work, but don't call him Buzz Lightyear. Don't call it Star Command. Don't have Zurg be Zurg. Just call him something else. Like, there's so much good ideas and just actual heart in this movie.
Yeah.
That it's a fucking shame that it just got dismissed because of all of the baggage that you put on it. And like, it's really funny. Like the people that went after the movie about it featuring like a gay relationship and like, it's so fucking small. It's such a small part of the movie. I really liked it. I thought it was funny. I think, especially since you didn't bring Tim Allen in to do Buzz Lightyear's voice, like, I think Chris Evans is fine. The rest of the voice cast, I think, is actually a lot better. The cat thing is pretty funny. It's not as good as the cat thing in the Marvels, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. I probably shouldn't have waited so long to see it, but hell, I still haven't seen Elio, so.
Yeah, you probably should have seen Elio beforehand. But like, okay, so like, my thing is with Lightyear is that if you're going to make it an early 90s movie and you're not going to cast Tim Allen in the voice of Lightyear, and I understand, but get somebody who, don't get Chris Evans is such a bland voice. Get somebody that's appropriate for that particular kind of movie. Like, you know, like of that era, like, you know, like get an analogy, get somebody like, I feel like Miles Teller would have been a great choice. Because yeah. He's kind of unique. He's kind of like, he's got the motor mouth that like some of those 90s action adventure guys had, or go like full on. And I mean, I know that you couldn't do it, but like, because that it's kind of a betrayal, but like get somebody that's kind of like Bruce Willis, a kind of New Jersey, kind of like smart assy kind of guy. Like, yeah. Because if you're talking about it, like it's a 90s action adventure movie. Like, it just, I liked the concept, but I just, the execution was like, okay, so you're just talking shit to me. You're saying blah, 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 but what you're doing is just making a rebranding of this so that little kids go see this and buy toys.
Yeah, and that's the crassness, like, commercialism of it is really what, like, it's the downfall of it, because everything else about it, like, I'm with the, like, the story is really good and it's sweet and it's pretty heartbreaking. Like,
yeah,
the whole time travel concept is, I guess it's not really time travel, but it is, but like, it's just, yeah, it's good. It's a good movie. And it, you know, unfortunately, just got tossed aside because they did a bunch of stupid shit to try to, you know, market the film. And that's a shame. So,
well, yeah. And then, well, they also like listened to too many people. Like, that's Disney's problem, is that they fucking listen to too many fucking.
That has been for sure their problem, especially with when, in terms of like, franchise stuff, they're listening to too many voices. And then maybe with the stuff they're trying, different stuff they're trying to do, they don't know how to market it. So they're not doing good enough.
Like, yeah.
It's the rarity that you get a Zootopia to. And I actually think, like, I don't even think this is remotely controversial. The success of Zootopia 2 was a fucking shock. Not that it did, like, decently, but that it did so good was a shock to everybody, because the first Zootopia movie was well received, but not this is the greatest animated film of all time.
Well, okay, and so like, but here's the thing is that you had like Zootopia was a movie that was like the original was made 12 years ago. Like 12 years, like more to the point, in 2014 it was released, right? And then you make the sequel 12 years later. That is two generations of children, maybe even three, that have grown up with it on Disney Plus, on DVD, right. Watching it all the time in a fucking circular, in like a literal circle, like a circle of life kind of thing. So
part of that is because it's not a movie I want to watch 47 times in a row, but like if I were a parent and I had to watch Zootopia 3 times a week, like it wouldn't be the worst thing. It's not like watching Cars 2.
Yes.
4 times a week. You know, it's like, okay, Zootopia is fine. You like this? Okay. We'll watch this every day. Like that's fine.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, and so of course, like, if you waited, it's the theory that I don't think that, like, it's the lessons that Hollywood doesn't learn from, which is that part of the thing with James Cameron, the reason why Way of Water made so much money was that it was literally, again, there was another one, 13 years, over a decade of waiting for a sequel. And you had multiple generations that, even though they say no imprint, no footprint, right? Well, I mean, the second one makes more than the first one. And that has to say that there's something with that movie. But here's the thing, like for me at least, is that like, you know, you get generations to start really kind of like looking like liking these things because they're watching it constantly. You're building it up. So like when you get a sequel, not every 2 or 3 years, but like a decade later, that builds an audience, right?
Yeah.
Like it shows that something has truly like been rewatched multiple times.
Which flies in the face of them buying Star Wars and going, we're gonna have a Star Wars movie every year for the rest of your lives. And then after 5 years, they're like, yeah, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Like,
it's diminishing returns because there's, it's not a special event anymore. So
no. And now like, but then now you're going to see a surprise. I feel like you're going to have a big surprise with how well The Mandalorian and Grogu does, because it's been so long since we've seen Star Wars on the big screen. And also, kids love Grogu. And I think that Hollywood thinks that bros are finance bros and they're financing this shit, they think that, oh, well, bros are going to make money. That's why we really need to make Doomsday well. Whereas, like, they're like, oh, well, just let fucking Jon Favreau make his little kiddie Star Wars movie. And whatever, like, we'll make, let Sean Levy do that. But what really is going to matter is MCU, which is not the case. I guarantee you that both of those dudes, because of the fact that they know how to make family movies, but they also know how to make true family movies, movies that are just not for like little kids, but for everybody, it's going to connect because everybody's going to go see them. And more, like, if anything is proven this year, look at all of those kids, like, look at the kids' movies. Look at Mario Brothers. Look at Goat. Goat made $120 million in the U.S. Made a double that. Made $300 million worldwide. Goat. A movie that we both like had said, nah, I ain't gonna go see that. I don't like sports movies that are animated sports movies. But there's a whole shitload of kids that did. Like Mario Brothers is gonna make $1 billion.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like,
it's absolutely insane.
And it's because they're learning the wrong lessons. They're not looking at the fact that, you know who really goes to see movies? Families. Families really go to see movies. You know why? Because they just want their kids, pardon the French, but sometimes you just want your kid to shut the fuck up. Yeah. You would rather watch you would rather watch Jack Black and Mini Benny Safdie sit there and argue and like have a parent relationship.
If it gets you to be quiet, yeah. Like just we will go see this. Like, please just sit down, be quiet for 2 hours, and like, I'm gonna nap and you watch this movie.
Exactly. Like, I will pay, I will gladly pay the $200 it's going to take my family of three to go see this shit, because it's gonna, like, that's why the Minions is gonna do $2 billion this summer. Why? Because it looks, it because kids love the Minions. Like, just love them. But also, now we've got a group of teenagers that love the Minions, but then also, you got guys like you and I who look at it and go, wait, Universal Monster movies? They're making this about Hollywood? Okay, I'll go, fuck. I mean, come on. Yeah, banana bullshit. But I mean, it's kind of cool, like the designs, and it's like, okay, you got me, I'll go see it. Like, it's like that, right? Like, you get, like, it's that kind of weird sweet spot where, like, certain people learn the lesson and other people do not. Like, I think that James Gunn learned the lesson. What was the biggest lesson I think he learned from Superman that is in Supergirl? Everybody loved Krypto. Put Krypto in danger. You're going to get people to go see it because they want to make sure that Krypto is okay. And we all know Krypto's going to be fine. But it's the fact that, like, this last trailer is, like it's perfect for me.
I like the first trailer, but this last trailer is, it really should have been the only trailer.
Yep.
Like, it's a perfect, tease of what the movie is probably going to be. We get a lot more Lobo. I'm pretty excited for Supergirl.
Yeah. It looks very much like the Guardians 3. Like, it's in the Guardians 3 mold, which it's like, oh man, that's going to be rough, but it's also going to be probably the thing that everybody it's going to be the surprise. Like, but again, like, you know, wrong lessons, but I mean, you know, I don't run Hollywood.
So, two more things, but just briefly mention them, because I feel like we're probably going to wind up talking about them hopefully next week. Movie-wise, I did go see a film called Over Your Dead Body.
Yes.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Over Your Dead Body.
I keep confusing the title. Like, I said it the wrong three different times yesterday. So we went and saw Over Your Dead Body. It's a movie that wasn't on my radar, but it somehow managed to make Steph's radar. Mm-hmm. And I fucking love this movie. You're planning on seeing it tonight.
Yes.
So I feel like we're going to talk about it, but just, everybody should go see this movie. It's definitely, I've seen a lot of movies this year, way more than I have usually seen by, you know, the end of April of a year. And I think this is definitely in my top five. I was surprised that I didn't even know who the director was. So, I'll never know how to say his name.
Jorma Taccone.
Taccone. Okay. Yeah. Who is part of Andy Samberg's little group.
Yes. He's, the Lonely Island Boys. He actually directed, have you seen Popstar yet?
No,
oh man, yeah, you're in for a treat. This
makes me want to go back and watch MacGruber and Popstar.
Oh, you haven't even seen MacGruber yet?
No, I never watched MacGruber.
Oh man, that's gonna be like, I mean, you know, like he directed one of our, like, he directed my favorite thing from the Sonic universe, which is Knuckles.
Yes.
So, like, yeah, I can't wait to hear from you in regards to MacGruber.
So yeah, it's definitely on my list to go back and watch. This movie is disturbing and violent and like mean, but fucking hysterical. Like, it is so funny, and like, he put together a really interesting, unique cast. And there's not a single person in the movie who isn't shitty. Like, it is just all shitty people. Samara Weaving, especially coming off of, like, just watching her be the final girl of, like, a franchise, and seeing her be just this horrible, most of the words I would use are so, like misogynistic, like specific, that they use, people like that use those words.
Yeah.
But she is just not a good person. And there's a framing device that the movie uses where every time you'll get to a point in the story, and then it'll switch perspectives, and then it'll take you back 2 days before and show you this character's perspective. And it's really, really fun. Timothy Oliphant he's Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
The real surprise, I think, is Jason Segel playing just an absolutely despicable person. Like, I haven't seen everything he's done, obviously, but like, I've seen enough Jason Segel stuff. Like, he's always, even the people where you're just like, yeah, his choices are bad here. He's always playing this kind of like likable goofball. And in this, it's just like, yeah, man, this is fucked up. You're fucked up. If you don't know what the premise, like, I've not talked about the actual story. I think not knowing the premise of the movie is probably better. But so spoilers, you know what the premise is.
Yeah. You've seen the trailer. I've seen the trailer, and I've seen the Norwegian film it's based off of.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, it's from the same guy that did Violent Night. What's the Snow of the Dead, or the Nazi German, like, he also did those movies. You know which ones I'm talking about, German zombie ones.
This does feel like a European kind of, like, because there is a level of, like,
sadism,
sadistic shit in here that's like, what the fuck, man? So yeah, I get that. That makes sense. Last year there was a movie, a remake called The Roses, a remake of War of the Roses.
Yes.
Which essentially has the same kind of premise. And this movie is so much better than that movie. It's insane. And that movie features two of the best actors walking the planet.
Well, and written by one of the best writers, it took me three sittings to get through The Roses.
It doesn't gel. Like,
it doesn't work.
This movie absolutely, in every way that movie doesn't work, this movie does.
Well, go ahead.
You don't want to like these people. And then, like, you kind of start seeing it from, like, both their points of view. And so you kind of wind up liking both of them, but also, like, not. You're like, oh, they're terrible people, but they kind of deserve each other. Yeah. So, I'm excited to see what you think. Well, I will get into probably more specific stuff next week. I don't know how good my, like, Adam will enjoy shit meter is, because we usually disagree on, like, the bigger stuff. I would be, because you did really enjoy Normal.
Yes.
I would be fucking shocked if this wasn't, like, high on your list of, like, one of the best movies you've seen this year. It's that fucking good.
I mean, I'm definitely very much so looking forward to it. As soon as I saw the cast and I saw who was behind the production, I'm like, yeah, I need to see this. I need to see this right away. And then when I realized it was based off of a thing that I had already seen that I really liked, like that definitely was like one of those things. So yeah, no, I will report. We will have another conversation about it next week.
So the other thing, which also I'm assuming you didn't get to, was a show that you turned me on to and that we both enjoyed is back for a season two. All the episodes dropped on Netflix this past week, and I binge watched the entire fucking season two of Running Point.
Oh man, no, yeah, okay. So no discussion. We can watch. We can talk about it next week because that's on our list this week to talk about. So yeah, no. I have not been able to get to it. It dropped on Thursday, so.
The guest stars are they really like decide, they went in on the guest stars. They're like, well, you know what? We're going to bring in whoever we can bring in, like do some like cast reunion kind of things with her. It's not Matthew McConaughey. I'm not, not that level, but it is like, oh, this is fun. This is, I will say this, and I don't, this is not a spoiler. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they understood what their secret weapon in season one was because he's barely a part of season two.
Oh, that sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And that was my worry is that they didn't understand the chemistry and dynamics. And so, oh man. Okay. Well, you know, I will report back because I know that that is something that I'm planning on watching this week. I just hadn't had a chance.
I knew you'd get to it, but mm-hmm. when you were like, I didn't have time to really watch anything. I was like, he didn't watch Running Point season two. So we can talk about that hopefully next week. Hopefully you can get to it this week. So,
yeah.
It was a nice little binge. Like it is a easy breezy kind of show. Like I know it's trying to be Ted Lasso-esque, but it does not have the weight. Like it doesn't have a Bill Lawrence behind it. Like no shade to Mindy Kaling, but sorry, Mindy, you're not Bill Lawrence.
No,
there's a really funny, well, no, I'm not going to say it. You'll see it. We'll talk about it. All right, so I guess the thing we both watched,
like yes.
We both went to the theater and saw Michael. I got to see it Thursday night. You saw it Friday night with what I assume was a packed fucking house.
Yes, yeah, it was. Like it was in IMAX, so I went to go see it the full nine. It's gonna make so much money. Like I already know. Like, it's.
It might even win an Oscar.
Okay. I wouldn't go as that far. It really. Okay, so like.
I'm not saying it's gonna win Best Director.
I don't saying. Like. I would be very okay. This is on the spectrum, like of the spectrum-y, like you know, musical biopics. I feel like this so much has like as much as like has so much of like Dewey Cox Rock Hard or Walk Hard in it. It distracted me.
That's every musical Eagle biopic.
Though. Yes.
Like that's all they are now. The problem with Dewey Cox is that it put its finger like so firmly on the pulse of like, this is what they're doing, and this is why it's stupid.
Yeah.
That now, if you've seen Dewey Cox, you can't ever not see that. Like, at least it doesn't do the thing where, like, it starts with him walking on stage. And, you know,
but like, it does, though. But it does. But it does. It starts with him walking, remember? It starts with him walking. It starts with him walking into like in his bad era, right? Like, and then it cuts to back to like. But okay, I'm not going to be as harsh as I am right now to it. Okay, like I enjoyed it. Like it is very okay. Like on the spectrum of musical biopics, it falls a little bit lower than Elvis. Like I like Elvis a lot.
I didn't see it. Like, I'll say this. So I stopped watching musical biopics probably after Dewey Cox. Well, yeah. No, because I did see, what's the one Tom Hiddleston did?
Oh, I saw The Light. Yeah, which is literally Dewey Cox. Actual,
yeah, that might be the actual last musical biopic that I watched. Was the Chadwick Boseman one after that or before that?
That was after that, but so that I one did is see so
the James Brown
but,
one.
But so. The James Brown one, let's both agree, the James Brown one is so special because he's such an unremitting prick in that movie.
Yeah,
like Chad should have at least have been nominated for that film because he is so horrible. That movie opens with James Brown high on crack with a shotgun going into a car dealership, holding everybody hostage. Like, that movie is way different than, like, any musical biopic I've ever... I mean, that movie, like, ends with him saying, no, I'm not going to help you, even though you're my brother. I'm not going to give you money, because fuck you. Like, wow. Like, but,
like the... So, like, I'm looking at a list of them, like... Yeah. Like, in recent years. I didn't see Elvis. I didn't see Bohemian Rhapsody. Haven't seen Rocket Man. I didn't see the Whitney Houston one. Let's see. I think I watched Behind the Candelabra. I think I watched that one. That was the Soderbergh one, Michael Douglas. I think I did see that.
That one is very different because of just how it treats its subject with the like with Liberace being gay and how much it is about him being gay. This one is very okay. So like this is very much cut from the Rocket Man and Elvis style thing. It's not even like I would say like of all of these ones that we're talking about, like Walk the Line and Ray are probably on and Straight Out of Compton are probably on the upper echelon,
Didn't see Straight Out of Compton.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see the Hendrix one. I didn't see
don't see the Hendrix one. The Hendrix one is terrible.
I didn't see the Bob Marley one from a couple of years ago.
Oh, that one was terrible too. It's okay.
Didn't see the Ma Rainey one. Like
I saw like, Ma Rainey. Yeah, like
my musical biopic stuff. Like I'm just basically out on it. So Respect. I didn't see Respect.
Mm-hmm. I saw that one too.
I'm just out on them. So I did see the Springsteen one. Actually, I forgot.
Yeah, about we that. Saw that the Springsteen was the last ones. One. Yeah,
I don't want to say it was bad because I don't think it was a bad movie. It was boring. It was just boring. That's the problem with that movie. Is it's boring.
It's boring, and literally, it does the Dewey Cox thing again. Like, literally, like, all these guys have daddy issues, right? Like, and they all fucking, like, it all is about, okay. I liked Michael, but I feel
like I had a great fucking time watching this movie.
But it's all, like, it very much plays, it like, Antoine Fuqua knows how to make a movie, and he knows how to manipulate people. And the thing is that he leans heavily into our love of Michael Jackson's music. Very much so the way that Elvis, like it's very similar to Elvis.
Sensationalist.
Yes.
Like all the weird stuff. And like,
but it doesn't go fully into it though.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to make Bubbles and the Llama a character, where he's talking to them, make them fucking go full weirdo on us. But you can't, can you? Because this is Michael Jackson. This is the Michael Jackson approved, the Michael Jackson estate approved biopic, right? So it's going to be more like Bohemian Rhapsody, where they don't even cover the real reason why Freddie got AIDS was because he was like, you know, he was having sex with multiple partners and was a part of the gay community. Like, they make it seem like he got it from having, like, you know, like having heterosexual sex, which is not the case with Freddie. Like, it was like, what? Like, that movie, don't even get me started on Bohemian Rhapsody. But anyways, like, going back to it, it's like, there are all these things that they hint at, but they never really fully go into. It's like, it's so kind of like, it makes it speed bumps and not like potholes.
Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of the Bruce Springsteen one, where it's so laser focused on this like one specific section of his life that's like, this is really just boring, man. Like it does a good job, I think, of, and I don't know, talking out of my ass, I don't think it's making anything up. Like, I think it does try to give you like reasons for certain things, like the constant nose jobs.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and then also like it's excusing his drug abuse, because it was like you, there's literally a scene where they're like, Michael, don't, like, you know, you need this because of your hair, because of your scalp. Yeah. I don't want to use drugs. But we all know later on, he had a massive drug abuse problem. That's what killed him.
Like, yeah, that's, and like, I get that you're like planting the, like, this is what led to that.
Yeah.
And like having his father insult his looks, like, leads him to like want to look different. And or the vitiligo stuff, like, it's barely mentioned. Like,
it is. It's just a throwaway. It's like, hey, we're gonna talk about his skin alopecia.
You don't see
stuff.
Him actually struggle, like, what that struggle must be like in that time, because it was not something that people talked about, that people were accepting of. That I mean, honestly, like, as a white kid, like, I didn't know anything about it.
No.
You know, because I didn't know what it was. And now I do. And now it's, you know, it's not that it wasn't okay then, but, like, I mean, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, like, you could just be shamed for whatever, you know, shit that's not your,
they could make up shit about your, about you, and like say that you bleach your skin, which is so not true. Like, you know, like it was, well, like, and then, but then there's other things like literally there's like, and again, I liked the movie because like what Fuqua does, like, and I credit everything that this movie is to Antoine Fuqua, because this is him taking this story that he was saddled with, lifting it by its by its shoulder.
Not the movie he wanted to tell, right?
No,
like, this is not the, like, he was gonna. I think the idea was to get into like all of the
court stuff, with the kids,
and the grittier stuff. But like, short of like, you can depict our dad as a piece of shit, but even. I don't even think it goes far enough on that. I mean, it goes far enough that you understand, like, if you didn't know that Joe Jackson was a piece of shit, like, you do understand that, but it doesn't even get to the level of like how much of a piece of shit he was.
No, because the, like, okay, so like I was talking to my wife about it, because she did not see it, because she just was like, it's not going to be. You know, she's like, I can't wait for it on video when, like, and to be quite honest, I will not be surprised if there's a director's cut of this, but it'll just be extended music scenes. It won't be actual, like, but like, I was telling her, I was like, it's like Coleman Domingo is like, he's like, he saw Lawrence Fishburne in What's Love Got to Do With It and went, I kind of want to do that, but was saddled with not an R rating. So it comes off as a kind of like, there's one scene, they have one scene where they really show like some, like how terrible he is, but the makeup is so weird because it feels like the In Living Color version. Do you remember the family? Do you remember Tito? And then he smacks him upside. Like, that's the makeup, what the makeup looks like. It still looks good. And Coleman Domingo does what he can with this. I mean, it is like, he is like, he, like, what he's able to do is like, he makes it on the cusp of like what feels like parody. It comes very close to parody, but it isn't, because he always finds the broken human, not the human, but the broken human. But it's like, the movie is basically telling you from the moment that he whips 10-year-old Michael, you're like, this guy's a piece of shit. Like, you turn on Joe so fast. It's like within the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh, fuck this dude. Like, if you didn't know anything about, like, the people that are going to watch this that are like 10 or 15 and didn't grow up with the Michael Jackson legacy or the Jackson's legacy won't know the weirdness of it. And I mean, he's a horrible person, but there's not going to be like, you shut yourself off the minute you show him take off his belt and literally beat an 8-year-old boy. Yeah. Like, and nobody does anything. It's like, well, okay. Like, you know, the whole reason why the joke of Tito was because Tito and a lot of the brothers like took a lot of that abuse on, but they don't want to get into that because they don't want to get into the messiness. Like,
yeah,
like the Jackson, like I was comparing it to, like, at least the Jackson's movie that we all grew up on has more of the in the thick of it bullshit that we like. Yeah, we make fun of it because of the fire lighting scene, the hair scene. Like, it's hilarious, right? Like, that was a joke. It looked like a TV movie. But when you look at the content in the Jackson movie and you look at it from Michael, like, there's no, like, even though Michael is a beautifully constructed and made movie, like, it is beautiful. Like, I do not want, like, $200 million, it's all on screen. Like, there are, like, the concert scenes, like the way that, like, LA, New York, and it's all visualized and realized, you really do feel like it's the 1960s, the 1970s, 80s. But the content of it, like the thick of it, like, nobody's a character but Michael. I mean, hell, Bubbles is more of a character than his mom and his dad.
Yeah, it's so weird because, like, I hate to sound negative about it because I did really enjoy
it. I did too.
But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, if this is like a 8-part miniseries,
yes,
like getting, like, even if you don't go past 88 or whatever, but you can drill down and get into, like, because we get a montage of, like, how he, like, is trying to recapture things that he, basically, his mom introduces him to.
Yes, like, everything.
You know, the comedy, the horror, the dancing, like, all of that stuff is, like, he used to just sit on the couch and watch old TV and movies with his mom. You know, and you get a sense of that, but because we've got 2 hours and 10 minutes to delve into, you know, 25 years of this dude's life, you can't really get into a lot of the, like, truly important emotional stuff. Like, I fall on the, like, I don't know what the real story is with the abuse allegations. Like,
yeah.
I don't fall on the, like, I absolutely believe every allegation, every person that's brought an allegation against him. Cause I mean, that's tough, but also, like, I'm sure there was something there, like, but you see in the movie, him, like, helping these kids in the hospital and, like, what that meant to him.
Yep.
And that wasn't that, that's true. That's fucking true. And, like, there's no part of me that believes he was doing that because he wanted to try to take advantage of any of those kids. Like, I don't know. It's a shame. Honestly, it's a shame that therapy wasn't more well thought of in his childhood or his young adulthood.
Yeah.
Because he never, maybe towards the end of his life, but for, like, there's a lot of like, he's a grown man, Joe. You can't tell him what to do. But really, he's not.
Like, no.
Not in a way that excuses what Joe Jackson was trying to do. Michael should have, obviously, like Brian Wilson, like, he's a genius.
Yeah.
And so, no, like, you shouldn't have been trying to contain that part of him. Where he needed help was the other things. Like, this was a guy, a kid that had no friends. His friends were animals that couldn't speak back to him, and storybooks, and the people he saw on screen watching TV with his mom.
Yeah. Like, that later he was able to, because of how big of a star he was, would later go on to meet those people.
Right.
Like, and become, they would become his friends. Like, it's like,
And most of them probably not bad people,
yeah,
but they're not the people that need to be like, they were Hollywood people, and he didn't ever get a real childhood. And
no.
So,
well, like the weirdest thing to me is this, is like you said, like, I'm going to just make a few like statements. Like, I, like you said, like, I don't know what happened with those allegations. Right. But here's the thing, is that he's never brought up in the Epstein files. Like, this is like one of the first things that people did was look him up, and he's not there. It's kind of weird, kind of fucking shitty. But also, like, we're in an era where, like, people don't want to talk about that kind of stuff with somebody who is much, like, just as famous, who's in a position of much bigger power, but we want to crucify one, but talk away another. Like, it's really wild to me that, like, we pick and choose how we decide to deal with this stuff now, because it's coming back up. Like, I did notice that there's a lot of chatter online specifically, and
New allegations. Like,
yeah,
literally yesterday, a new suit was filed against the state, like, for some other kids he supposedly abused or assaulted, and you know, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know where to fall on that. I do know that, like, even from this movie, which is like doing its best to just only show like the worst parts that it's showing are only the necessary worst parts.
Yes.
You know, like, it doesn't dive deep into that. You can still see that this was a dude who was extremely, extremely troubled, and
yeah,
like, just needed somebody he could be honest with, and instead he was surrounded by people that he just couldn't ever be honest with, and wouldn't be honest with him. You know, I do want to bring up Kellen Durrell Jones plays his bodyguard,
Bill Bray. Yeah,
yeah, who I think is credited, at least in the movie he is, but I, in real life, I think is credited with giving him the Joker nickname.
Yes. He does.
The time he was a kid,
yep,
he called him Joker. And you know, I don't know. I've never read anything on Bill Bray. Just know that, like, he was probably the closest thing Michael had to, like, somebody that actually would protect him.
Yeah.
You know? And, because even his mom doesn't, and ever really protecting from their dad. Like, and the movie goes out of its way to stay away from, like, shining a bad light on her. But it's, and I know it's, like, of the era, but it's kind of hard, like, to not think, like, why you couldn't do anything. And I know, like, in that era, it was difficult for a woman to, like, I mean, you couldn't even have a checking account. like without yeah. some man signing off on it. Like, I understand that that's difficult, but it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, this kid was special, and for the longest time, you did nothing.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and like, there's the implication, like, okay, so like, the thing that I feel like Fuqua does very well is the movie feels very coded, and it feels like coded in the way that a 1950s film does. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of like implications, but not it being implicit. So like you can if you choose to, Fuqua does this great job of implying a lot of stuff. Like the Bill Bray stuff, like there, like if you, it, all you have to do is read a lot more into Michael, like, and you realize how much of a father he was to him, like you said. But it's implied here. It's implied that he was a warm figure to Michael in these moments. But like, literally, like, it's well known that like in the 80s, Bill was a big part of why Michael stayed so safe. And why so many stalkers, like the Billie Jean stalker that he talked about, never got even close to Michael, or what, like what was really, like, what could have been really close to Michael. He also, like, you know, he insulated him at a certain point from his family, like, you know, physically from his family. And like the most telling thing to me about their relationship was, he retired, I think, in 96 or 97, but he, like he paid, like, Michael paid his full salary with increases until he died in 2005. Wow. Imagine that, like, for 11 years more. And like he had major health problems, paid for the health problem. Like, he took care of Bill until the end. Like, and that says a lot about that relationship. I'm not going to, like, Michael had always given to charity, he did care. Like, the thing that is so odd about everything is that if you really look at it, he loved, like, I know it sounds like it's so weird and such a dynamite-y, like, kind of thing, because, you know, you want to believe in children and stuff and you want to believe these things. But then we also know about those predatory stories about families. Like, there's a scene that's very coded about, do you remember, like, the scene in the store with the mother and the young boy?
Yeah.
And how, like, that is totally a coded thing, because we've heard about those kinds of mothers that would do certain things to get that ounce of fame or get that money to get that paycheck. Yeah. Like, you know, sacrificial lamb of their child, push them in front. It's very coded, like, and that's where I like, I look at this film, and the more I think about it, I'm like Fuqua, like, I don't think Fuqua ever gets enough credit for the filmmaker, the verbose filmmaker he is. I mean, he came up with the propaganda film guys, and I hold him in as much a high regard as David Fincher, Spike Jonze, Dominic Senna, all of the guys that. He was around that were making the films, like, you know, like the music videos, and then eventually made movies. Like, he came up with those guys and he made movies, and I respect him the same way. And he's very much, like, I feel like of those guys, he's the Tony of the group, right? He's the Tony Scott, the visualist. And I think, like, with this movie, he takes this step that he had a very hard job to do, which is to make a movie about Michael from a certain point to a certain point. And he does it, and he manages to code things in, but he's hampered by, this is not only a $200 million studio produced movie, but it's also overseen by Michael's children, Michael's estate, and Michael's family. And that is three major flaming hula hoops that you have to jump through, right? And he does a wonderful job of it. It's just the movie that you, like, the movie that I wanted, and the movie that it is not that. It is very much so, like, a movie about the greatness of Michael's music. Like, the movie, when it soars, it's when it's from the moment of where he goes over to Epic up until the tour, the reunion tour. From that section, that hour and 15 minutes where he's making Off the Wall and Thriller, that's the movie I like. It's almost like, yeah, I want to switch the Springsteen form and Michael's form,
exactly,
with artists. Like, I don't give a shit about, like, you know, Jeremy Strong going, and he's going to be change the world. No, you know what? Who actually changed the fucker?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I like Bruce. He's great in concert, but yeah, like, he's not Michael Jackson, man.
He's like, could you imagine like them having like? I don't know why that didn't hit me. That hit me so wrong until I watched Michael, where I was like, Miles Teller should have said that shit about Michael, and what Miles Teller said about Michael should have been said by Jeremy Strong in the Springsteen movie.
Yeah,
but their formats were making an album.
I really liked Miles Teller in this too. Like,
I did too. Did you? Okay,
he's underused, man.
He really is. But also, can I ask? Did you realize, like, and this is the thing that I had to laugh as soon as I saw him, when I realized who it fucking was. So the president of Epic, Walter Yankoff.
Yeah, it's Mike Myers.
Yeah. When I didn't realize it until halfway through the scene when he starts yelling. I was like,
yeah,
that's fucking Mike Myers. Why the fuck is Mike Myers in this movie? But it's such a Mike Myers role. It's like heavy makeup. But it also works because if you've ever seen that guy, he literally is playing that guy to a T. Almost like he shouldn't have played it like that. Like, give me some performance. Don't give me a Saturday Night Live skit. But it was like wild. But the cast is amazing. Lorenz Tate as Barry Gordy. Like,
and that's another, like, again, this is all like based on what's in the movie, but
yeah,
like, there's a moment like it's all, and I appreciate that you're trying to keep it small,
yeah,
and instead of making it big, but like there's a moment where Michael and Barry are sitting down at the board and Barry's teaching him like about what everything does, and Joe comes in there and tells him, oh, it's time to go. Mr. Barry's important. We got to leave him alone. And Barry Gordy takes a second to be like, Michael, you can ask me anything you want, anytime you want. You can like sit here. Like, I'll discuss music with you. Like, and like part of that is because like he recognizes how special this kid is, but also part of it is like, you're letting he's telling Joe, like, I know who the important person is, and it's,
yes,
not you.
Yeah. And Barry was like, and it's funny that Lorenz Tate plays Barry Gordy, because in Ray, he plays Quincy Jones and somebody else plays, yeah, Quincy here.
Yeah.
I find that hilarious. Like, it's one of those things where like Lorenz Tate has always been in musical movies, because he's also in one of my favorite underseen ones, because it's so specifically about the women. It, like, I feel like Ray took a lot from what Why Do Fools Fall in Love, and like kind of uses its format, but doesn't. But I really do love him as Frankie Lyman in Why Do Fools Fall. I mean, I love Lorenz Tate. Like, he's like,
yeah,
he's
pretty great.
I fucking like Menace to Society. Like that was my jam. And then like, I just kind of like, he was just a dude that I love. Jones, Dead Presidents and Menace to Society were like a 1-2-3 hit. I don't like, if you've never seen the action movie Man Apart, that's a fucking, that one is a banger with him in it. But he's,
yeah, go ahead. It's one of the Vin Diesel movies that's like, oh wait, this is good.
Yeah, this is like, good. This is like the same format that you do, but it's actually, I mean, it's one of those movies that it like, it because it's rated R, but because it takes everything so seriously, it actually works. But anywho, but like Kendrick Samson as Quincy, like I love Quincy. Like everybody is really good. Like really, Lauren Harrier just shows up for like 2 seconds.
Dion Cole's in it for like a minute and a half as fucking what's his name?
Oh, Don King. Don King. under heavy makeup. Heavy makeup. But then, like, Liv Simone shows up as Gladys Knight. Like,
yeah, I didn't even realize that that's who she was.
Oh, okay. Well, like, at first I thought it was... Okay, so, like, at first, because of the song she was singing, I thought it was Tina. Tina during her Ike and Tina days.
Yeah.
But then it was... When I was watching the credits roll, I wanted to see who played who, and then I saw it. It was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. It's a really great cast that they casted pretty great because they casted to actor talent rather than like star. Though every one of these people that we're talking about is like. Literally, like, and we haven't even talked about Jafar Jackson, which
who's phenomenal.
Oh, who's
like,
yeah,
absolutely phenomenal.
Like, makes it so that it, like, I don't think that like people are gonna understand how much of a person he makes Michael, because like I'm very curious about where he goes after this, because it's a special performance. Because he makes Michael a human, even in the, like, the most eye-rolling scene to me is literally when, like, because it feels like something out of, again, Dewey Cox, which is that he's literally sitting there talking to Bubbles, and he goes, yeah, Bubbles, one day we're gonna have our own Neverland. And, like, and Bubbles, like, literally CGI hand points at the fucking Neverland, and, like pets it. I'm like, oh my god, you really did that. You rent there. But Jafar Jackson as Michael, like every moment he's with a CGI with CGI Bubbles, which I want a whole fucking, like, if you're gonna go there, fucking go there and make a whole Planet of the Apes movie. Make it fucking weird. Like, like, don't just do this half-ass thing. Where's Bubbles in the second half of the movie? Like, come on. Give me all the Bubbles. But anywho, the way, like, I feel like you can't be a great performer if you're, like, unless you can perform with a CGI character the way that he does. Like, he makes Bubbles into a real thing. Like, and you believe, oh, this dude had a relationship with, like, these animals, like, those were his friends, you know, and, like, just everything from the, like, and I love that you, like, in the Thriller, like, in the making of Thriller, thank God, like, you know, again, I have to say this with all comfort and, like, you know, pardon the French, but fuck John Landis. But also, like, I love the fact that he's in the background, but he's accurate. Like, you can definitely see he looks like John Landis. And I love the
I thought they might get, I was like, are they going to do this whole thing where they're like,
Fuqua would never do that.
Playing the dad.
No, Fuqua would never do that. Like, I do love that Fuqua and John Logan decided to make it all about the assistant director. It was kind of like a fuck you to John Landis, which I love. Like, I loved that. But also, like, in that moment, like, that to me is the shining moment of Jafar Jackson, because he's moving like fucking Michael. Like, just a weird side note. Before I went to see the movie, I decided to watch all of the mini movies that he made throughout his career. So, like, I watched all, like, what are the 8 or 10 of them? But the one that I, like, the first one I started with was Thriller, but then I watched the making of Thriller, and thank God I did, because in the making of Thriller, literally that scene happens, but the way that Jafar moves while he's doing the dance, if I didn't have that fresh in my mind, I was like, Jesus Christ, he does move like his uncle. Like he literally, like it's not mimicry because it's not exactly one for one, but damn, like there's few people that can move like Michael, like at least to me. And to see this, like, yeah, it was, it's impressive. Like, I don't know how to say it other than it was like the entire performance wasn't a Saturday Night Live skit. It was like a genuine, heartfelt performance by Jafar Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty, pretty phenomenal. I think my favorite line delivery by him, it's such a throwaway thing, but there's a moment in the pool, like he's floating in the pool and his brothers are giving him a hard time. And he's just like, he basically says he's waiting on God to speak to him.
Yeah.
Because if he's not in the right place for God to send the ideas, God will send them to Prince.
Yes.
And that made me laugh. I was like, it's such a pitch perfect line delivery for such a ridiculous statement.
But also because of, and then another thing that they didn't really talk about, his religious background and beliefs.
Yeah.
He would absolutely believe that. And the way that it's played both as a joke, but also like Michael's not like the only person that isn't laughing is Michael. Because Michael believes it to his heart. And Michael would have believed that. Just like Michael would have believed that he's helping the kids. You know? Yep. He believed in the children. That, like, you know, he was the one that told Quinn. Like, I was surprised that they didn't do the, like, they didn't do the, like, his part, his big part about the Hands Across America song.
Yeah.
Even though I know that it was probably just, there's just too much to be done, right? Like, you know, Thriller and Off the Wall are enough, right? Like, you know, there's more than enough fertile ground to actually talk about. But I was like, you know, there, like, and I know why they didn't do it, but then there's the moment that you have where you could have a bunch of people, like, you don't do the Forrest Gump thing, right? You just let people come in and play and actually have other people come in and do the roles for the different people, right? But then also, you also have, like, you could also do the fuck you and do, hey, so Jeremy Allen White, do you want to play Bruce again? Like, let's get you in Michael. Because, yeah. I mean, like, Bruce was a part of that. But also, like, you know, because it was such a big Quincy and Michael thing, and like Michael started the Quincy thing of like, let's do this. I will do it if you do it. I really wish that they had done the song. Was there anything that you felt like, should we have gotten more of Bad? Or do you think that they're going to cover that in the sequel? Which, because they're talking about, they're like, this movie is going to be massive.
It would be wild. There's so much stuff that they can't talk about post, like, what, 92 or something?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the sequel would basically have to be, like, just
dangerous. And bad, right? Like, the tour is legendary, right? Like, the tour, and then that's when it really started with the paparazzi and then the lies about like buying the Elephant Man and how much Neverland cost, which wasn't really a lie. Do they just talk about the media scrutiny and the drug abuse?
Yeah,
because maybe. They can't. Because,
but like, even like, is the estate going to be okay with talking about the drug stuff? Like, I it's an interesting idea, a sequel to a musical biopic. It's like, there's just so much. I mean, the Jackson estate had to pony up $15 million for them to reshoot parts of the movie because of a clause in one of the lawsuits that forbid them from depicting anything in regards to the lawsuit. Like, it's...
Which is wild. Like, how do you fumble the ball like that? How do you not at one point Is it because
you want to look at it and be like, okay, like Antoine Fuqua, did you not do that? But it really, like, the more you dig in, it feels like it's stuff that they just didn't tell anybody. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, I know that you have all this and you've shot some of it, but you can't use any of that. Cause, and it's like, why the fuck didn't you tell me? Like, from the jump, why didn't you tell me we could not approach this subject?
Yep.
And it's weird, man.
And here's the weirdest part about this is that the movie was done, and there are people that have seen that version of the movie. There are people that have actually seen that version of the movie with Michael and the lawsuits and all of the framing devices. It's the reason why they got John Logan. Like, John Logan is not, like, that's the dude that wrote The Aviator. Like he's not, like, he is one of the premier screenwriters. He wrote Skyfall, Spectre, like Hugo. He wrote all of these, like these are movies that, like, he was known for on spec, like, which means like no money up front. He wrote a biopic of Citizen, like, he wrote the Orson Welles biopic, and it was so well researched and so well written that Ridley Scott wanted to direct it, like, and spent years trying to direct it, which eventually ended up making an HBO movie. They made an HBO movie about it, but, like, that's who John Logan is. And so I wonder if they got him with the tease of, let's just go ahead and do this. And yeah. I mean, the Jackson estate is, like, it's rumored to be worth a couple of billion dollars, not a billion dollars, but a couple of billion. So what's, like, an extra 15 million when you're able to say,
for them, it's nothing. It's, yeah. Just, as a filmmaker, it's got to feel absolutely frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, we thought we were going to be able to, like, really get into this and, like, present at least some version of, like, his side of the story, even though he's not here. And even when he was here, like, he really didn't ever talk about it.
No. He did that one interview. Like, he did that one interview. And I almost wonder if that is going to be, like, the framing thing of, like, talking about it, because I wonder if they can talk about him. They just can't talk about the kids because, like, you know, and that's the, okay. So, like, that is the weirdest part, is that if you dive into the NDA stuff about it, like, so they did a documentary about Michael, and a very damning one, right? Like, where they talked about the
kids. One from a couple of years ago.
Yes. Yes. And that's the weird part. Okay. Like, that's the thing that I'm like, so a documentary crew that doesn't have anything to do with Michael can talk about their side of it, but the other side can't do anything, even though it's a very weird situation.
Yeah. I don't understand the way it can be framed. Like, he's just not allowed to, or the estate, I guess at this point, is not allowed to present any kind of defense against the accusations. I don't know. It's fucking weird, man. And, like, there's also, I don't know. Like, me and Steph were talking about it yesterday. I was like, and again, I'm not doing a whole, like, I don't believe the victims thing, but no. Macaulay Culkin doesn't really have anything bad to say.
Webster didn't have anything bad to say, even though, like, did you notice the Webster cameo?
Yeah, that was
wild.
Yeah.
That was wild, right? Like,
I think Corey Feldman kind of has some not positive, but Corey Feldman doesn't really have a positive thing to say about anything.
Well, and then also Corey Feldman also, like, decided to out Corey Haim and say some, like, a particular person raped Corey Haim. I'm not gonna, like, you guys can look it up yourself if you want to go and take a look at what he said about Corey Haim, even though Corey Haim has been dead and it's not his place to say anything. But also, like, Corey Haim is very kind of, he's been saying a lot of stuff, like, but also again, it's not that I don't believe him. It's just,
there's so much there that it's like, and there's such a history of like bullshit.
Yep.
That it becomes hard to, you know, it's like I've made no qualms, like, don't really talk about it here, but like I have a sister who unfortunately is a drug addict, and like one of the last like serious conversations I tried to have with her, like, is like, the problem is you lie about so much so often that nobody can believe anything that you're saying. So you can tell me you're clean all you want, but I can't believe you because I have 20 years of history of like, well, that's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't really have a good track record. So it makes it hard to like take what you're saying at face value. And like back to a point you were making earlier on, like it does feel a little like disheartening that in this country, especially, we're in a place where like there's documents of child molesters and we're not doing anything about it. But we're coming after the estate of a dead man for like his supposed like interactions with children.
Yeah.
But we have living people and documents that prove their ties to child molestation.
Yes.
And nothing is being done.
Nothing.
So it's just, and like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't have a kid, but I'll put it to you like this. I do have a dog that I love more than anything in the world. And I'll tell you what, if somebody did something to my dog, I don't know if there's any amount of money that they could give me that would keep me from destroying their life.
Yep.
If at all possible.
Yep.
I'm not Keanu Reeves. I'm not John Wick. I couldn't do any of that. But I do understand that like there's no amount of money that those people could have given John Wick to make up for the fact that they fucking got his dog. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, so I don't know that makes it feel so cynical. It's just like, oh, well, like, so you took the money and ran. And so at some point he, like, if all this is true, he continued to do this to other people because you just took the money and ran. Because fuck it. Like, why not just get rich?
Yeah,
like,
get mine. I'm gonna get mine.
It makes it feel so fucking cynical.
And crass, that, like, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it makes you not want to believe it.
Nope.
Because, like, what fucking parent? But I don't give a shit who you are.
Yep. No, you're right. Like, and that's the wild part, is that that's the, like, and again, you're right in that, like, I'm not saying I don't believe them, but like, you know, but also like there's this a lot of other stuff where it's like, so like we're going to come after this dude and we're going to start this again. But literally there are fucking in there.
Can we get the actual proven, like, documented pedophiles?
Yes.
Like, could we do something about them, please?
Exactly. And like, is it like, you know, the loudest part of that is not being said out loud, but it absolutely is. Because what is Michael Jackson and what are not those billionaires? And I can exactly tell you what they are not. And I'm not going to say it, but that's just the ugly picture that is painted. And it's just like, come on, be better about this. Come on. Like, how hard is it? You literally have testimony. You'll believe some people, but you won't believe others. Okay. I like, and that's what pisses me off, is that it's not it's not that this, like, these kids do not deserve reciprocity. They absolutely do. But, like, what about these other people that are not, like, that we, like you said, that are absolutely, like, it is absolutely 150% known that they have given testimony. And if we're going to believe somebody for something, then why aren't we believing these other ones that have given hours and hours of testimony and treated like criminals? These women were treated like criminals.
Yeah.
Subjected to hours and hours of questioning by an FBI that did not believe them. I don't know, it's, bro.
It's wild.
It, man, is wild. Like, yep.
Anyway, so we enjoyed, yeah, Michael. It has problems, but, like, none of those problems are, like, really the fault of the filmmakers, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they told the story they set out to tell. It looks incredible. It's well acted. It's well directed. Like, the parts that it's well written. It just can't go as deep as we'd like it to go, which, yep, is pretty unfortunate, but it's also a pretty standard thing when you're dealing with biopics like this. Like, we mentioned a few, the James Brown one, I think, is the rare one that really, like, gets on into the, well, Ray, I guess, kind of, sort of.
But yeah, Ray does.
Even Ray kind of, like, you come out the other side, you know, feeling a certain way about it. But, yeah, it doesn't go as in-depth as we'd like, but it's certainly better than the fucking Springsteen one. So,
He's going to change the world.
God. Yeah. Next week, what's coming up? Hopefully we're going to talk about, Over Your Dead Body.
Yes. And are you going to see Devil Wears Prada 2?
Yes.
Okay. I'm actually
seeing that Friday.
I'm actually seeing that early, so we can definitely talk about it. Cool. I'm actually seeing it at a press screening. So yeah, new fancy me. Woohoo. But yeah, like, I'll be seeing that on Monday. So, like, we can definitely have a conversation about that.
All right. So, yeah, expect some sassy fashion talk from us next week. So
absolutely.
until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where we've got a ton of stuff up right now. We have more coming up. You know, we have more 4K reviews. I just got my dirty grubby hands on the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves 4K that Arrow is bringing out, and I'm going to be diving into that this week and hopefully have a review for this coming up week. I am super excited because, yeah, I love that movie, even though, like, I love that movie as much as Kevin Costner's accent drops from the movie. And that's a lot of times. So you can only imagine how much I love that movie. It has, like, Christian Slater's, like, F-bomb drop is probably one of my favorite F-bomb drops in a PG-13 movie of all time.
Yeah, it's up there with Hugh Jackman in X-Men First Class.
Yes. When they go to visit him.
Why they go?
Yes.
Go fuck yourself. yeah, that I loved Robin Hood as a kid, and I probably haven't seen it since I was a kid. But there's parts of that movie that, like, hang out in my brain, like, I want to carve his heart out with a spoon. Cousin, why a spoon? Because it's dull, you twit. Like, it'll hurt, I mean, more. It's just in my fucking brain, man. Like, yep. There was another one yesterday. Stephanie has never seen the Bill and Ted movies.
Oh, so my box set
finally came.
Oh, the 4K, the one from Scream, right? Oh.
Yeah, so I finally, that took months. Like, the hell? Why was it on back order so long?
Because they sold so many. You got it at the 29 or the 39? I think I got it at 39. I think. Okay. Like, because
it might
that's
have been 39.
But it's still like it was it's a $100 box set that they sold for like 60% off, right? So like they oversold it. Like it took mine, like, and I was like, I found it right away. It took mine a month to get to me. Like a month.
Crazy. I was like, I ordered this in like February.
But isn't that the best? Isn't that the best though when something shows up, you're like, why the fuck? What is this?
With the pre-orders, but like this wasn't this was a thing that existed. I could but anyway, she never seen them. And yesterday, something came up about the Circle K, and
strange things are afoot
in the Circle K. I was like, "Do you know what that's from?" And she said, "No." I was like, "Bill and Ted." She was like, "I've never seen those movies." But anyway, the point being, like, I probably haven't seen Bill and Ted since I was in my 20s, but that line of dialogue is embedded in my brain.
Yeah.
Which is, somebody says the Circle K and immediately I think strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That and Waterloo. Those are great movies. And I'm looking forward to hearing what your thoughts are on the third one, because I know that you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I have not seen the third one. So we're that's going to be a weekend at some point. We're going to do Bill and Ted. So
nice.
Anyway, we will see you guys next week talking about Devil Wears Prada 2.
Yes. Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.